Krusty, do you think about your father a lot?
All the time. Except when I'm at the track, then it's all business.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to an eargasmic edition of the U.S. Racing Sports Gambling Show. I am your host, Derek Simon, and this is the show where we talk about everything and anything related to the world of gambling, and a great show on tap today. Joining me in the I Need to Know segment is Rosemary Homeister. She's a former jockey, in fact, a former Eclipse Award-winning jockey. She's going to talk a little bit about her career and also her new endeavor. Then, of course, we'll have Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. We're going to talk about the NFL playoffs. Of course, as a Seattle native and a Denver-living guy, we've got one team now. And everybody's telling me that my one team can't win. So I'm kind of depressed. But we'll find out this weekend. Anyway, all of that is coming up.
I'm looking forward to completing your training. In time, you will call me Master.
Alrighty then. I learn it from a book.
I find this scientifically fascinating.
You're going to remember this the rest of your life.
Oh, I already knew that.
I don't get it.
What part didn't you understand?
Will you never learn?
Tell you I can. Yes.
I'm now thrilled to be joined by jockey, or former jockey, Rosemary Homeister. She now runs her own, well, she's a personal trainer. You can find her at jockeyrosefitclub.com. How you doing, Rosemary?
I'm great. How are you?
I am well. Now, I mentioned that you were a former jockey. Is that true? Have you officially retired?
Yes, I'm pretty much officially retired. I actually ran my last race at Arlington Park the end of September, the last day of the meet. And I just had, you know, in my mind, I wanted to get into the personal training business for a while now. And what made my decision was I have a four-year-old little girl. And I just got tired of, you know, moving around every 6 months, and I just wanted to have more time with her. I wanted to make a better schedule, and just a different life for myself and my daughter.
You know, you mentioned not wanting to move around and so forth, but I would guess, just having been a former rider, that fitness was not an issue, or in fact, did you kind of change your regimen a little bit?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, the fitness that you get from racing is nothing like you do it like as a personal trainer. I mean, the way jockeys ride and the muscle groups that we use, and all the, actually the muscles that fire at one time when you're in a race is totally different than, you know, segmenting different muscle groups. You know, if you're working back, biceps, shoulders, you're just going to be working those certain muscle groups at a time, or, you know, even if you did a full body, but the strain and the vigor, I guess you want to say, is totally different than race riding.
Well, let me ask you this, because I look at your photos and you got a lot of muscle. And I know in my own case, like, I've gained a lot of weight as a result of putting on muscle. Have you gained weight?
I've gained 5 pounds. And for me, that's more water weight, because as a jockey, you're really lean, mm-hmm. and you sweat a lot when you're racing. So you tend to not carry as much water weight as a normal person, I would say, that doesn't ride. So I gained more of water weight in my body than I did any kind of fat or anything like that, because I'm still small and still light, and like my weight still fluctuates. Like when I rode, I used to fluctuate between 110 and 112 all the time. So now I'm fluctuating between 115 and 118 pounds.
Let's talk a little bit about your riding career. You are, of course, the first woman to win an Eclipse Award as the Outstanding Apprentice Jockey in America, but there's a story behind that. Tell folks how you won that award.
Well, I had been in competition that year with a jockey named Jesus Bracho, which is a friend of mine. He's a very good person. It's unfortunate what happened with his, however he was guided in his career, to come to our country and lie that he wasn't really an apprentice rider, but I'm not sure how that all came about. But, anyway, so I was an apprentice jockey competing against a journeyman, and that year we were up for the Eclipse Award together. I had gotten injured for 2 months, towards the end of the year. And so before that, I was actually ahead of him in wins and earnings. And when I was out for my, broken hip, I actually lost my momentum. And when I came back, you know, I gained a lot of momentum back, but I wasn't able to really catch him. I think I still had more money earned than he did, but he had more wins. And, you know, it's a, what do they call it? The sport of kings. And mm-hmm. it's a male dominated sport. And, you know, it's kind of, I think it just favored in his way in that sense, I felt. And then once, I think it was like 3 years later, they found out that, there's a handful of riders that had falsified their records to become apprentices in the United States, and they weren't, you know, in their own country. Like, they had already ridden for a year or two before they had gotten here. So they had more experience. And when they found that out, you know, they called out those riders and they sat them down, you know, with suspensions and stuff like that. So when they did find out that Jesus Bracho had falsified his records, they basically took the Eclipse Award away from him and kind of put an asterisk next to my name as, okay, she won the Eclipse Award now because, you know, he really cheated. So my mom was not having that, you know, because I didn't get to go to the ceremony or, you know, anything like that for the Eclipse Award. And my mom knew that I worked very, very hard to, you know, to earn that award. And she made sure it happened. And it took about two more years before they actually agreed to have me come to one of the ceremonies for the Eclipse Awards. And it was exciting, you know. It was kind of bittersweet in a way because I wish I would have won it in that year that I was riding, but I still was able to receive the award. So it was just, you know, I have the award and I'm happy to have it. I'm just very happy that I had a very successful career in racing. But like I said, I didn't get it when I think I should have gotten it.
Yeah, Rosemary, I've been a fan for 30 plus years. I love this game, but let's be honest, racing is never ahead of the curve on these kind of things. I mean, I'm just glad you got it too. Hey, talk a little bit about the riding aspect, because I got to tell you, I've been thinking more and more about doing this where I'm going to actually try to get on a horse. How do you get the guts to even ride a horse? I know your parents were both involved, but what made you think, hey, yeah, I want to go 35 miles per hour and risk my neck riding horses for a living?
I don't know. It's just the thrill of the game. You know, I was bred into the business. You know, like you said, both my parents were both jockeys. And I just grew up around the thoroughbreds. You know, they're just, you know, 2 and 3 years old when they're racing. So they're very high strung. So I was brought up around them. So it was kind of second nature for me, the quickness of how they were. And when I first started breaking the yearling at my parents' farm, you know, I learned so much about hands and, you know, how to be gentle with their mouths, you know, teaching them how to, you know, feel what a saddle's like. I mean, trust me, I got thrown through fences, flipped over through metal gates, and, you know, flung down to the ground because they just, you know, they're just babies, so, you know, you basically got planted in the ground every couple times you go around the ring. You know, but you learn how to, it's basically you kind of learn how to fall. It's kind of, you know, have you ever heard the saying, like, if you ever, you know, get hit by a drunk driver, the drunk driver's fine because their body's so relaxed.
Right.
Pretty much.
Right.
They don't even know what happened. Well, that's the way I had to teach my body to react. If a horse was going to throw me, I just had to, like, drop, just, like, relax as quickly as I could. You know, you never know what's going to happen, but thank God I was able to avoid a lot of serious injuries in my career because I was able to just get my body to relax when something did occur like that. But, yeah, it was a lot of falling, you know, like learning.
Rosemary, yeah. You're not helping me. If I'm going to get on a horse now, you're talking to me about how I need to know how to fall. In fact, the other thing I was going to ask related to that, I've heard that you know, horses can kind of sense. You know, well, animals in general, they can, you know, sense fear and they can, you know, that's part of being a good jockey. You kind of communicate through your hands. Is that something else I'm going to have to worry about, that the horse is going to know I'm a chicken?
Well, you know, you shouldn't worry about it. You should go to the animal, like, you know that the horses, when they look at you, like if you try to put your hand forward into their forehead to try to pet them, if you ever notice, they'll like lift their head up and they'll kind of look at you sideways. Well, horses can't see directly and straight in front of them. They see to the side. You know, like as a human, our eyes are forward, so we can see things directly in front, to the side. Well, horses can't. So when you go up to the horse, you want to put your hands down to let them smell you first and know that you're not going to come flying through to, you know, hit them in the head or, you know, go too fast. And what that does, it gives them confidence in you that you're going to be gentle with them. And it is. It's a fear thing. If you're afraid, they're going to sense that. If you're on their back and they know that they got your number, they might just take off, you know.
Oh,
but most of the horses that they should put you on, they're gentle, they're kind, they understand. You could put a child on them, you know. So you want to get on the right type of horse if you're just learning how to ride.
Okay. Well, I want to talk more about your riding. And obviously one of the pinnacle of this sport is the Kentucky Derby, riding in the Kentucky Derby. You got a chance to do that. What was that experience like?
It was amazing. I mean, just even to get the phone call from the trainer to ask me if I would like to ride his horse, Super Blitz, in the Kentucky Derby, I was so excited. I mean, I had to pull over. You know, I mean, and it was only, I think I was 21, or I don't even remember. I was young. I was like 21, 22 when I got the phone call. I had been riding this horse, his stakes and stuff like that. I had one on him and had a bunch of seconds and stuff. And, you know, just to get that opportunity to ride in the Kentucky Derby, to be in Kentucky for the first time. And, you know, I mean, horse, everybody knows horse racing in Kentucky. So it's really, it's the most exciting experience at that moment of my career, you know, and just to see the huge crowds, the excitement that goes into it, and to be in the actual race. I mean, I can't even describe it in words, because it was just like, you can't imagine the feeling, you know, being out there. This huge racetrack, and you're like one of, I think there was 18 horses that day, and I was the number one horse walking out of the tunnel, and all you hear is the scream and roar of the crowd, and the energy that came from it was amazing.
This is probably going to be tough for you. I think it would be for most riders, but of all the horses you've ridden, do you have a favorite, and why?
Oh, there's so many, you know, nice horses, from cheap claimers to top stake horses that I've ridden. It's so hard to pick one, you know. And I do have to say Super Blitz, because he did take me to the Kentucky Derby. I will say Cloudy's Knight. I went to the Breeders' Cup with that horse. And mm-hmm. I won five races with him. I think four of them stakes. And also last year I had a filly that was riding Include Betty for Tom Proctor that I won the $400,000 in Oaklawn Park. You know, so, but there's so many more other horses that, there's so many to the name. Like, I love horses. I love animals, but the horses just bring so much love and passion and excitement to my life that it was just, when every time I rode, I always rode them like they were my own. You know, I took care of them. I made sure they had a great experience in the race, you know, or even after the race, win or lose, you know, because they're out there, they're athletes, you know, they have feelings too. People might not think they do, but they do. They sense what you feel. They sense, you know, that you're, you know, they want to try for you. You know, you're not going to fit every horse either as a jockey. I mean, horses are like people. They all have different personalities. And, you know, there's some horses that I fit really well and some that I didn't, you know, but for the most part, I've loved my career. I loved all the people that I met, you know, and just really what is most intriguing about racing for me was every day or every minute, it's constant change. It's never the same. You know, the horses, I don't care if you rode the horse 10 times, every time you ride the horse, he's going to change the way he ran or do something a little bit different or act different. Or, you know what I mean? Every time you go out in the morning, you're always getting on newer horses. Learning, you have to learn about that one particular horse in 7 minutes in the post parade. Whatever the trainer told you about their, you know, their personality or the things that they do like or don't like, you know, sometimes, oh, they don't like dirt in their face, keep them wide. This horse loves to go through horses, save ground. You got to take this horse back. This horse needs to be in front. I mean, there's so many instructions you can't even imagine, you know, and to figure out the horse within 7 minutes before that gate opens is, you know, it's very draining on the brain, you know, pretty much. I mean, it's a strenuous and mentally and physically strenuous game, you know, and it's constant. It's every race, every morning you're on a horse, you know, different. So it was very stimulating, you know, so that, and I'm like that. I need to be go, 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 go. You know, I can't just sit in an office and have an office job or, you know, something like that. So I needed something that when I decided to retire is going to keep me stimulated. And that's why I chose personal training in one sense, but I love to help people. You know, I care about people, how they feel, how they look. You know, I want them to be, have a positive outlook on life. And the biggest reason also for wanting to retire is my daughter. I want to spend more time with her. I want to be the best mom that I can be and teach her and be at every activity and event as she grows in her life.
Well, I'm a big fan, Rosemary, and I love the fact that you are helping people. I mean, people don't understand that. With personal trainers, it really is about personal relationships and helping people be the best they can be. I think you're doing a great job at that. And again, setting a great example for your daughter as well. Once again, give folks the website address to find you.
JockeyRoseFitClub.com, and that's JockeyRose, FitClub.com.
Very good.
And it will help you with your nutrition and your fitness. And if you ever have questions, just send me an email.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you so much, Rosemary.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Looking for some action? Well, if it's sports and casino action you're after, USRacing.com has got you covered. At USRacing.com, you can get the latest betting lines on pro and college football, basketball, and all the MLB and NHL action, too. Heck, you can even get the latest odds in the presidential race, the Academy Awards, or who's going to be the next James Bond. So if you're looking for some sports and casino action, look no further than USRacing.com, the place that's setting the pace.
Now, back to your host, while he's still sober, here's Derek.
Now, here's why you can win.
Every time you lose, you die a little bit. You die inside a portion of you. Not all of your organs, maybe just your liver.
In our business, there is no second place. Either you're first or you're last.
You sit, salty.
You walk in that door on your two legs, all fat and cocky.
You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
See that? That's your IQ, buddy. Zero.
If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and trying to run this play in the alley.
Remember, we do everything in reps. So if I have 2 reps of water drinking, usually we do 10 reps of everything, so do another rep of water drinking.
I am now joined, as I am every week, by Kevin Rogers of VegasInsider.com. Kevin's going to help us break down the NFL football games this weekend. How are you doing this morning, Kevin?
Derek, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm very well. And, you know, Kevin, we talked about this last week in terms of the NFL playoffs, and it's just a league that is full of teams that are very, very equal, and the two biggest lines, both the teams covered, Green Bay and what was the other one? It was another 6.5-point line, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and, you know, you looked at the two of them. Obviously, both the losers in those games had very good opportunities to win. Green Bay was leading in the fourth quarter. The Arizona scores on that tip ball that went in the end zone and took the lead. And then he kind of thought, all right, Arizona had this thing in the books before Aaron Rodgers made a couple miraculous throws to force overtime. And obviously, they ended up losing in overtime. But, you know, you look at Pittsburgh. And I know you're in the Denver area, and the Steelers team, I mean, they had that game. In spite of Antonio Brown being hurt and Ben Roethlisberger not being at 100%, the Steelers played very well, and if it wasn't for that Toussaint fumble and Mike Tomlin not going for the field goal instead of punting to go up by 4, Steelers had a good opportunity to win that game. And maybe they get Antonio Brown back this week and Ben gets a few more days of rest. Who knows what could have happened? But obviously, Peyton led the Broncos down on that go-ahead touchdown drive. The defense held up at the end on Ben, and they ended up winning. So now we get the top two seeds in each conference going for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I said the Lions were 6.5. They were actually 7.5. And you're right, Kevin. That Denver game was one of the most painful games that I've seen in that I did a column for U.S. Racing, and I actually picked against the Broncos, which I hate doing. I just don't like picking against teams I'm rooting for. And then, of course, you almost had the Broncos wind up covering that because Pittsburgh went for it deep in their own territory. Denver kicks a field goal. And I'm thinking, I can't possibly lose this game on that kind of a play. And, of course, Pittsburgh marches down and gets another field goal. What do you think about this week's games? And I want to preface, especially the NFC Championship with, you know, I really thought, and again, I'm a Seattle fan, so, you know, I got to keep that in mind as I say this. But I thought that Carolina was susceptible in their secondary. obviously Seattle started so poorly, but I thought they kind of showed that in the second half. It would seem like, at least in terms of that matchup, it's tailor-made for Arizona.
You know, watching the beginning of that game with Carolina and Seattle, you know, I'm sure Pete Carroll and the rest of the team would have thought, all right, can we just hit the reset button like you used to do with video games? Like, let's step on the court or press the power button and reset this thing. Because after that first 5 minutes or so, they gave the 60-yard run and Russell Wilson throws the pick six. You said, wow, all of a sudden now we're down 14-0. We're done. And to Seattle's credit, they came back and made it a game. They could have just laid down in the second half and just got out of there, but they didn't. So, you know, that's good to see, even though obviously they have nothing to show for it now and they're eliminated. But, you know, I think with Carolina that, you know, like you mentioned, Russell Wilson chewed him up in the second half. I don't know necessarily if Carolina was just kind of playing the let's get out of here game, up 31-0 at the half. We have one half to go. We're going to play the NFC Championship. If things would have been different, if let's just say it was a 10-7 game or a 17-14 game where maybe they're a little more focused. You look at the Arizona Cardinals coming in this week to Carolina. Arizona has been a fantastic road team this year. 7-1. The only loss came at Pittsburgh, coincidentally without Ben Roethlisberger. That was a Michael Vick and Landry Jones tag team on Arizona, beating them earlier this year on the road. I look at the Cardinals and I say, how many really good road wins do you have? And all I could find was one at Seattle on that Sunday night a few months ago. They beat Detroit when they were struggling. They beat Chicago early on in the season when they were struggling, and they actually had in that game a couple non-offensive touchdowns. They beat Cleveland, who's horrible. They beat St. Louis, who's horrible. They beat San Francisco, who's horrible. So I think Arizona won a lot of these games on the road that they should have won because they were better than their opponent. And now they go cross-country, which I don't really put in as big of a factor because I don't think that is as big of a factor. I think Seattle just fell behind because they didn't make the plays early. I don't think they fell behind because they were traveling three time zones. But, you know, Carson Palmer just was not impressive. And I know it's easy to say, oh, well, he won't be impressive again, but I just don't know where he's going to step up. And I understand Cam Newton doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, doesn't have much more playoff experience than Carson Palmer does. I just think being at home, Carolina, you know, after escaping Seattle in a sense last week, I think they're going to take care of business. It does seem like kind of a public play, but it's hard to go against a team right now that's 9-0 straight up at home and 7-2 against the spread at Bank of America Stadium.
Let me ask you this, Kevin, because I tend to agree. The one issue that I have is in everybody's mind, you know, it's kind of like we've talked before about value, and in everybody's mind, you have Carolina that just came out like gangbusters against Seattle, overall looked very impressive. And you have Arizona that didn't look very impressive, and I especially agree with you on Palmer. Does that inflate the line? Is there a reason to play against that line, or do you still think, hey, Carolina's going to win, and you know, we don't want a chance, you know, trying to figure out exactly by how many points?
Well, what I think is kind of interesting here is a lot of people called out the disrespect card on Carolina last week, that, you know, Seattle, who escaped Minnesota with that 10-9 win the week before, and they end up having to go back again to Carolina, go home, prepare, and then go back to Carolina. But you would have thought that Carolina beat them earlier this year at Seattle, and Carolina would have been a little bit of a heavier favorite, maybe like 4 points or so, you know, not crazy. But they were laying 1.5, 2, and you think, wow, this team's 15-1, and they're giving them no respect against the Seattle team that, granted, has been in the Super Bowl the last 2 years. And now you see Carolina open up as a 3-point favorite against Arizona, who, granted, I mean, Arizona did win the NFC West, and they were the second seed. So they bumped that number up a little bit. And I just wonder if they are given a little more respect, if they, you know, if they feel maybe Seattle's a little bit better than Arizona. I don't know how to necessarily interpret that. But, you know, if Carolina ends up winning this game by double digits or so, you say, wow, like there really isn't that much respect for this team that's 15-1 on the season and that's undefeated at home. And Arizona's been a great story. I personally did not think they were going to do what they did this season. I thought that last year that, I mean, obviously Carson Palmer got hurt, but I thought that they escaped in several games and they wouldn't get those breaks this year. And they didn't even need those breaks. They've just blown out a lot of these teams they played. Arizona's a lot better than I thought. But at the same time, though, I just think that Carolina here, that, and I hate this term, going on a mission in a sense, but, you know, staying at home, that's big. And I not to say I'd be surprised if Arizona beat them, but if Arizona can go there and win and go 8-1 on the road, then that'll be very impressive as well.
All right. Well, I know you're not going to give me, or just I have a feeling you're not going to give me good news about this next game. Denver hosting New England.
You don't know me that well, my friend. I like Denver in this game.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, tell me why.
I like Denver for a couple reasons. And I don't know if this is the world is on the Patriots, and that's why I like the Broncos. Look, you and I both know, a lot of people listening know, Peyton's not what he was. We're not telling you something that you don't know.
Right.
We know that Peyton Manning has obviously dropped down several levels in health. He doesn't have the arm strength. We understand all of that. But at the same time, you're getting Peyton Manning as an underdog in the playoffs for the first time since he went to the Broncos. And Peyton has played all of his games in the playoffs with the Broncos at home for the exception of one. That one game was against Seattle in the Super Bowl. We know that was a disaster. But he has not played a road game with the Broncos in the playoffs, which is unbelievable to think. Now, you look at Tom Brady, and we know about his accolades, but let's look at the negatives here. The Patriots are 1-5 their last six visits to Denver. So he's had problems there, and I don't know. You could look at different games, different circumstances, and say, what happened? 2 years ago in the AFC Championship, they scored 16 points at Denver and lost. So they've had problems scoring there. They had that big lead earlier this season. Granted, Brock Osweiler was the quarterback and not Peyton Manning. But they had that big lead, and they squandered it, and Denver came back to win that game. Now, obviously, they have Gronkowski healthy. They have Edelman healthy. So those are, you know, positives for the Patriots. But at the same time, though, Denver's a team that's won as a home underdog against Green Bay and won as a home underdog against New England this year. So I just look at taking the value here with Denver, that you're getting them with the points, and New England should be favored. I mean, I don't disagree with that. But I think one thing people are forgetting here, Derek, is Denver owns an excellent defense. And everyone's talking about Peyton. What about the defense? The defense has been great this whole year. And especially playing at home, that doesn't make it easy on the opponent. I just think that taking the points here is the play with the Broncos.
Yeah, you raise a great point about that defense, because I've compared that defense to the 2013 Seattle Seahawks defense in the sense, you know, Seattle was the number one defense again this year, but Denver is a playmaking defense. That defense, they can make plays. They can get the interceptions. They can get the fumbles. They rush the passer exceptionally well. And that's where I think Brady could be susceptible. I just worry about, is Denver going to be able to stretch the field? How many points are they going to be able to score? I would love to see Manning on the first play go deep, but again, you know, that's the Denver Bronco fan coming out of me. Anyway, I appreciate it, Kevin. We'll see how it goes, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thank you, Derek.
All right, take care, Kevin.